Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the gender-based procurement division here at Car Talk Plaza, i.e. gifts for men. We figure that some of you are faced with this very dilemma at this time of year, what to buy for the man in your life. And Richard Pullman from UFL.edu, is that University of Florida or is it Unidentified Flying Educator, sent us this treatise on the subject.
What it says is gifts for men. Buying gifts for men is not nearly as complicated as it is for women. Follow these rules and you should have no problems. And then there are three pages of rules, but I'll just give you a couple
summarize.
That I liked. Rule number one, when in doubt, buy him a cordless drill. It does not matter if he already has one. I have a friend who owns 17 cordless drills and he has yet to complain. As a man, you can never have too many cordless drills. No one knows why.
That's true.
Isn't it the truth?
I bought my nephew three of them.
That's right, you did.
Oh, well.
I mean, the second time it was excusable, but the third time. Come on.
I ran out of ideas.
Rule seven. Buy a man a label maker. Almost as good as a cordless drill. Within a couple of weeks, there will be labels absolutely everywhere. Socks, shorts, cups, sauces, sink.
Labels.
Rule nine. Good places to shop for men include Northwest Ironworks, Par Lumber, Home Depot, John Deere, Valley RV Center, and Les Schwab Tire. Napa Auto Parts and Sears Clearance Centers are also excellent men's stores. It doesn't matter if he doesn't know what it is. Ah, it's from Napa Auto. Must be something I need. Hey, isn't that a starter for a 68 Ford Fairlane? Wow, thanks. I mean, isn't it true?
Pretty much.
Here's the last one. Rope. Men love rope. It takes us back to our cowboy origins, or at least the Boy Scouts. Nothing says love like 100 feet of 3/8-inch manila rope. No one knows why. Whoever put that together, and there are many others, they'll all be on the website, cartalk.com. I think this is the kind of stuff that's helpful, especially in these times when women are trying to buy gifts for us.
Yes.
And I wish there was such a list for men.
The other way around.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm sure.
How many pairs of earrings am I going to buy?
Oh, I don't know.
Help me out.
It is complicated. It is complicated. And it gets harder and harder every year.
Doesn't it, though? Well, you know, part of the reason it gets harder is because over the years, you learn more about your failures, like buying lingerie. I mean, how did I know that was a mistake? It took me 15, 20 years to figure out that that wasn't a gift for her.
Yeah.
That was a gift for me.
Yeah. There you go. We need help. If you have any help for us, write soon.
Man.
If you'd like to talk to us about your car, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Elizabeth from Denver.
Elizabeth from Denver.
Hi, Elizabeth.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
You have such a perky voice. Are you a perky person?
I try to be, I guess.
Yeah. Are you a fourth grade teacher?
No, I'm actually training to be a social worker.
Oh, same thing.
See, it's close.
Well, you remind me of my fourth grade teacher. You asked me the first one or the second one, right? Anyway, what's going on, Elizabeth?
I have a very perplexing problem for you.
Perplexing?
My windows fog up and I can't get them to stop.
You a heavy breather?
Under what circumstances do they fog up?
All the time. Actually.
All the time. This could be bad.
It's funny because only since I live in Colorado right now, but my family's in Virginia, and I went back for Thanksgiving, and I came back. My car was here. It's never happened before. The car's 10 years old. It's a Volvo. And all of a sudden, I drive the car the next day, and the windows fog up. And it's every window in the car except the driver's side window. And I've tried everything. I turn the defrost on. I roll the windows down. I can't even wipe it off with a cloth because it's weird.
Oh, really? What do you mean?
Is it oily?
Well, it's almost like, it's almost like there's a substance on there or something.
Oh, dear.
And it's a Volvo?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Don't say that, please.
Oh, yeah. Elizabeth, what a way to start off the
Look,
show.
Look, we can pull the plug on you and pretend we just got disconnected.
We won't give
you the evil answer. God. When you mentioned your problem,
yeah,
before we knew it was a filmy substance that was on the windows,
yeah,
I was going to suggest that maybe moisture had gotten into the car
right.
that couldn't be removed by the air conditioner.
Right.
But unfortunately, your problem would not be solved by the air conditioner.
Because the stuff that's on all the windows is not your basic fog.
Oh, okay.
It's antifreeze.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we think so. And that's where the moisture is coming from. What's coming out of the heater core is a mixture of antifreeze and water.
Uh-huh.
And that is getting all over the windows. And no amount of defrost is going to get rid of that. You may need a flamethrower.
How long has this been going on?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Now, you could be getting now dangerously low on coolant.
And brain cells.
And brain cells, right.
I've been wondering
why. So the first thing you have to do is fill it up. Well, you can't even drive the car because if you got this stuff all over the windows, you can't see.
I know. I have to roll down the windows when I drive.
Stick your head out the side like a dog.
It's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, no, you need to take it to your repair shop and have them replace the heater core.
Now,
if you're lucky, it could be the heater control valve, but I'm 99.999% convinced.
Okay.
Jeez,
this is not good news, Elizabeth, and we're terribly sorry.
But you're going to make somebody very happy when you go to the repair shop and you tell them you need a heater core. The guy is going to say, I smell boat payments.
Oh, it's a lot.
Only because it's hard to get at.
It's
in
hundreds.
A Volvo.
It's hundreds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not thousands, though.
Well, I've already spent thousands this year.
Oh, so then hundreds will be easy.
Hundreds is easy.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And get it fixed before you crash.
I will. Thank you.
See you, Elizabeth. Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK.
How deadly is that stuff? I mean, if you're breathing that stuff in day after day.
Well, you know, I mean, I breathe it all the time.
You're talking like this.
It's hardly affected. No, we know that it's toxic in that if you drink it.
If you drink it, but breathing it is close to drinking it.
Yeah, oh, no, it certainly isn't good for you. In fact, companies that have leaky heater cores and, you know, often have had recalls. I know Volkswagen had one some years ago where they replaced a lot of defective heater cores because you don't want people breathing that stuff if they don't have to. There's enough bad stuff to breathe in the car. Anyway, 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's
especially when you're with me.
8255, a lawyer on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Mike from Oakland, California.
Hey, Mike, what's going on?
I have a 1993 Toyota pickup truck, four-wheel drive.
Uh-huh.
And I bought it used, and it had about 60,000 miles on it. And when I bought it, it turned out it needed a new clutch. I found that out when I moved from a flat part of town to San Francisco.
Oh, that was an expensive proposition.
Yes, it was. Well, they gave me a deal, and they put a new replacement clutch in.
Oh, that's good. As an aside, if you had known how to do it, you could have figured that out before you paid for the truck. It's a very simple little test, which for $100 we'll tell you about.
So these guys sprang for the new clutch?
Somewhat.
Somewhat. So you reached some kind of an accommodation
exactly.
here.
I stamped my feet enough to make him.
Yeah, good.
But now I went through that clutch already.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, because you live in the Bay Area.
Well, there's that, and I do occasionally take it for a little jaunt in the sand and occasional driving around off-road. And I'm wondering if I should get a better clutch, something aftermarket. And is it worth it?
Oh, man.
To spend the extra money on something like that.
Well, I don't know what kind of clutch they put in when they put it in, but you don't have a lot of options.
Mm-hmm.
We had a customer once who we named Heavy Duty.
I was just thinking of
you were thinking of Heavy Duty.
I was thinking of this very guy.
What was his real name?
His name was Tony.
Tony, that's right.
And Tony had had a couple of clutches put in his car, and he finally came to us, and this would be his third clutch, and he was sick and tired of paying for clutches every year or so, and he said, no matter what you put in, I want the heaviest duty clutch you can get. So we went out and found one of these racing clutches. You know, we had to put an explosion-proof bell housing on the thing. Well, I'll tell you, you needed three legs to push this pedal down. And so we install the clutch for him. We say, man, this is heavy duty. If you burn this thing out, we'll be amazed. And the next time I see him, he's 4 inches taller. And he had to resort to wearing platform shoes because he couldn't, it was killing his foot to step on the clutch pedal. He had to wear those shoes with the 4-inch thick soles. So that's one of the disadvantages of going heavy duty.
Doesn't that also put pressure on the bearings in the motor?
It does put pressure on the thrust bearing of the engine, exactly right. That it's not really designed to take. Now, if you weren't using the clutch a lot, it would make very little difference because the only time that thrust bearing gets worked is when you're actually stepping on the pedal.
Mm-hmm.
But
how long did the clutch that they put in last?
36,000
miles. And how long a period of time was that? A couple of years?
4 years.
Oh, I would just go ahead and put, here's what you should
do. I would do the same thing.
I would put a regular clutch in there. You know, my guess is these guys just threw a clutch disc in there and not the whole shebang.
Not the bearing, not the throttle bearing.
They probably didn't even throw a clutch cover in.
Bastards.
Well, that's what we would have done. I mean, the customer starts complaining that he wants a clutch. They probably didn't even take the tranny out. They just slipped it in.
And you can be sure that if they were responsible for paying some portion of this, they put in the cheapest clutch they could get. And there are rebuilt clutches on the market, which we've had very bad luck with. Mm-hmm. I would go to Toyota, buy the actual factory clutch, and put a new release bearing, a new clutch cover or pressure plate, a new disc, and a new, if it has it, a pilot bearing. And you'll get another 50 or 60 or 70,000 out of this, in spite of the hills out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't go beyond that.
Okay.
Yeah, but don't go heavy duty because your left leg is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you'll have to buy 2 pairs of pants and have them cut in half.
one for the left leg, one for the right.
Stick with the original stuff.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Bye, bye.
Bye, bye.
1-888
heavy duty.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-228-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Matt Newcomb, and I'm calling you from the one and only Amundsen Scott South Pole Station in Antarctica.
No!
Really?
How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I'm trying to stay warm down here. It's a nice and balmy minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit out today. The wind feels a little high. It's down in the minus 60s today. But summer's coming, so, hey, I'm hoping.
Summer's coming.
Summer's coming. That'll mean it's going to go up to, like, 20 below.
Wow. Maybe.
How long have you been down there, Matt?
I've just been down here since beginning of November. I'm just one of the summer type people.
Oh, so you still have toes.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward, though, to get back to the place when someone says, oh, it's 40 degrees out. They mean positive 40 degrees.
Exactly. So what actually are you doing there?
I'm working on a 2-meter microwave telescope.
So do you have a vehicle problem? Is that why you called us, or you just had squat to do?
No, we actually do have a vehicle problem. It's got tracks, not tires.
But, it doesn't matter.
We don't care.
We've got an LMC 1200. It's an old vehicle made by a subsidiary of the DeLorean Motor Company. It's got a Ford 6-cylinder engine in it, and it works fine when it's warmer than minus 40 outside.
Mm-hmm.
But when it gets colder, you can only drive it slow. If you start driving it quickly, it's eventually starts bogging down, losing speed, and then just stalls, and you can't start it again. And you end up having to call the mechanics to come pull it off with a big Caterpillar tractor.
It has a carburetor, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got a carburetor.
That's it.
Take that carburetor right off, Matt, and
replace it with a polar bear. What? Take it off. What's he going to do? I think you have carburetor icing. I'm surprised it doesn't happen sooner.
Okay, so I'll carry a heat gun next time I pick this thing out.
Well, exactly. And when the guys tow it back to the shop and they warm it up to, like, zero, it may be that enough of that ice melts that the thing will start and run again. And, of course, they can't find anything wrong with it. They can have it in the shop where I'm sure it's heated and probably 40 or 50 degrees above zero. And they rev the thing up and check all its vital signs and everything is okay. But out in the road, so to speak, It just can't take the weather. Alternatively, yeah, it could have low compression.
See, the trouble with the solutions to the carburetor icing problem are that you say that you take a hairdryer or something with you, but that's not really going to work because that will only work when you stop and you may be able to get it restarted. But as soon as you start to drive again, it's going to ice right up again because of something called the nozzle effect. Every time air goes pouring through the carburetor, it gets colder. So as soon as you try to drive it, it's going to keep stalling out unless you put some kind of a permanent heater around the carburetor.
Yeah, actually, you might want to have them rig up a pipe that runs from the exhaust, from the vicinity of the exhaust manifold, up to the air cleaner so that the air cleaner can suck in hot air through that conduit, and it's warmed up by the proximity of the exhaust manifold. And that might be enough to keep the thing from freezing up. How much longer is your stint in Antarctica?
I'm just down here for another 2 or 3 days.
2 or 3 days?
Days?
I'm just down here for the weekend, you know?
Well, live it up and make sure to put on your sunblock.
Good luck, Matt. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, look, it's time for us to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll answer last week's puzzler, which was about sharp-eyed police work.
Ooh, I can't wait to remember it.
Soon enough, Grasshopper, soon enough. We'll be back with the whole story of daring detective work and more of your car questions right after this short break.
So please stay tuned.
Will you love me when my carburetor is busted? Will you love me when I cannot shift my gear? Will you love me when I need a new condenser? And when my clutch begins to slip, will you shed tears? Will you love me when my battery needs recharging? Will you love me when I cannot blow a little horn? And when my connecting rod is bent, I no more want my scent. Will you love me, oh mama? Will you love me, oh mama? Will you love me when my car wheel alone can go?
And even though at least 10 laws immediately stop a-leaping whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a prison warden and need to send inmates running back to their cells.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler.
The police puzzler.
Exactly. This was sent in by a fellow named David Kropp, and here it is. You ready?
Yeah. Go, go, go.
An off-duty policeman was vacationing this summer with his family when he pulled off the highway to get gas. There are a lot of hints in here. I just want
summer.
I'm going to put underline summer.
Summer.
Now, while the attendant was filling their tank and someone else was cleaning the windshield, the wife was watching her husband. There he sat, almost in a daze, his eyes glued to the rear of the car that was being refueled directly in front of theirs. What's the matter, hon? She asked. I don't know for sure, he said, but there's something fishy about that car in front of us. Looks perfectly normal to me, she said. Well, not to me, he shot back. I think it's a stolen car.
Oh, I remember this.
Dave, you do, really?
Yeah, I do.
In fact, I'm going to call my partner back at the donut shop, station house, and I'm going to have him run that plate number. And I bet it won't match the year, make, and model of the car that it's attached to.
Yeah.
The question is, what did he notice that made him suspicious?
And you said it wasn't the four guys with masks and guns in the car.
No, it wasn't that. And you didn't need to infer anything. I mean, I think everything you need to know is in here pretty much, and you didn't need to infer any other information that might not be stated.
Okay. Yeah.
Here's what he saw. It was summertime.
Yes.
He saw a license plate on the back of this car that was covered with bugs.
Bugs?
Bugs. The kind of bugs that would accumulate on a surface like a front license plate.
Oh, so he thought the guy had stolen the plate off another car.
Exactly, and put it on this stolen car, or he'd been driving backwards at a very high speed, which also called for an explanation of some kind. Anyway, do we have a winner?
We certainly do. Our winner this week is Dan Harrington from Columbus, Ohio. And for having his answer selected at random from all the correct answers that we got, Dan's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division, with which he can get one of our new distracted driving long-sleeve T-shirts.
Yeah, now if you want to make the case that driving while talking on the phone is dangerous, you first have to demonstrate that it's hard to do two things at once, right?
Sure, yeah, of course.
Well, here are two ways you can do it. Try doing a radio show while watching my brother pick crumbs out of his beard. That's one way. Or get our Car Talk Distracted Driving T-shirt.
Take the T-shirt.
Yeah, it's hard to describe, but easy to understand when you see it, which you can do at our Shameless Commerce division at cartalk.com, Dan. Anyway, we have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show today, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we'll take your calls at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Charles from Taos, New Mexico.
Hi, Charles from Taos. How are you?
Why can't we hear you very well?
I had to call from a payphone. Can you hear me a little better now?
Yes, that's better.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got a bunch of quarters with you? What's up, Charles?
Well, I have a 1980 Ford F-150. It's been in the family for a while. It's got 140,000 miles on it. I'd like to keep it going as long as possible. In a typical New Mexico fashion, it's beat up, but it's, you know, mechanically sound, more or less. The problem right now is when I start out from a stop or when I'm going up a hill under a load, there's this squeaking noise, kind of like a squeak, 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 squeak. And then when I get up to speed, it kind of goes away. Or if I put in the clutch or pop it into neutral, it goes away. But when I'm starting out, it's always there. The clutch seems to be working fine. Everything seems to be functioning fine, but that noise is kind of scary.
So let me get this right. Now, you're accelerating. Yeah. You hear the and it speeds up. Its frequency increases as your speed increases.
Exactly.
In lockstep, so to speak.
Exactly.
And then if you immediately step on the – if immediately upon stepping upon the clutch, the noise goes away?
It does.
Okay. And if you throw it into neutral, the noise goes away.
It does. But lately, just this last week – it doesn't go completely away when I do that for some reason.
Okay. I didn't think so. I was about to call you a bald-faced liar, but you spared yourself. What's wrong with it is that you have a seized universal joint.
Uh-huh.
You have, yeah. I believe this thing, F-150, it must have just a one-piece drive shaft, in which case it has a universal joint on each end.
Right.
If you were to take the drive shaft out, and you would do that by unbolting the end of it at the differential.
He's not going to do this.
He's going to do it. He's been in his family for 65 years. Someone's... Are you up for this, or are you going to take it?
I think I am. I've never done it, but I've attempted lots of other things, and it's turned out okay so far.
Okay, then you can try it.
So you unbolt the drive shaft, and you will, once you've unbolted it from the differential flange, you will then pull it out of the transmission. It's just a slip joint into the transmission, and you will have the drive shaft now on your lap.
The drive shaft is that big, long shaft that runs from the back of the transmission to the rear end. So
what kind of weight should I be preparing for?
Oh, it's not heavy at all.
No, it's not bad.
It looks like it's heavy, but it's a hollow tube.
Right.
You'll see what that universal joint looks like, because it's the little thing that's at the end of it.
Looks like a plus sign.
Looks like a plus sign,
and
exactly.
And you're saying the U-joint is at the differential?
Well, there's one at the differential, and there's one at the transmission, and one of them is seized.
Okay, the noise is coming from the transmission area.
Okay, then that's probably the one that's seized. And you'll notice that it'll flex in one direction, but in the other direction, it won't turn at all.
Okay.
And then you have to decide whether you want to replace those joints yourself or take it someplace and have them do it.
Do you recommend a new U-joint, or is that something I
can... new ones. Yeah, the drive shaft will get reused. You'll just replace the joints, and I would suggest you do both the joints.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and if you're going to do them yourself, I mean, after you smashed one thumb with the hammer, you might as well keep going and, you know, see if you get knock out another digit.
I've got plenty of battle scars already.
Okay. No, I think this job, I have the sense from talking to you that this job is within your grasp.
Yeah, I'm with my brother.
Right, not be within your grasp after you've hit a few fingers with the hammer, but
you may have no grasp.
Until then, you'll be all right. Good luck.
Hey, thank you very much.
And just remember, when you bolt the thing back in, make sure that you've engaged the rear U-joint correctly in the differential flange in the back. The last thing you want is for those cups to come flying out at 60 miles an hour.
Okay.
But just pay attention.
All right,
see you, Charles.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227.
Even worse, do you remember Stanley's Chevy?
It wasn't his Chevy. It was our Chevy.
He gave it to us. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had a problem with this very same problem, except it was the front U joint.
Yes.
And I remember I had just driven home from work on Route 128 at 100 miles an hour.
Probably 30.
And I pulled up in front of your house, and the drive shaft from the front fell down.
Because it had been making that noise for weeks and weeks and weeks, and what did you do?
Turned up the radio. But, and I mean, the danger of this, if the front of the drive shaft falls down and hits something in the road, the car just flips right over. So
yeah.
My life was saved.
Because you were going 20 miles an hour.
Because I was going 20 miles an hour, right.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Adrian calling from Vail, Colorado.
Hi, Adrian.
Vail.
I have a standard 2001 Subaru Outback, and my husband and I have this ongoing debate about using cruise control, and a small wager to go along with it. But as you know,
we won't ask
whose side you're on, so we'll be so that way we can be impartial.
That's okay. Not what I meant, but fine. That
okay.
Too.
Oh, that too. Oh, what the wager is. Oh, we may ask about that.
It has to do with shoveling snow, but.
Oh, okay.
As you know, there are lots of really high mountain passes in Colorado, and when we go to Denver, which is about 100 miles away, there are two 10,000-foot passes that we have to go over.
And y'all wacko.
Victoria's Secret doesn't enter into the wager world, does it?
No.
I know. I mean, just, you know.
Are you going to tell us that y'all wacko husband puts cruise control on as he's going through these mountain passes? Are you going to tell us that?
No, what I'm going to tell you is that he puts it on going down the back side of the pass. And my questions are these. One, does it engage the braking system at all if you start to exceed the speed that it's set for?
No.
And two...
And two, is my husband crazy? Yes.
No, if it doesn't, is it bad for our car at all?
Well, you know, if... It would only maintain the speed to the extent that the engine and the transmission together could maintain the speed. For example, if you had the thing in fifth gear and you had the cruise control set for 35 miles an hour.
You'd be dead.
It would just keep going faster and faster and faster, of course, depending upon the steepness of the hill.
Right.
And no, they wouldn't put the brakes on. There are a couple of cars, I think, which do that, but this isn't one of them.
Most cars don't.
Most cars don't. Most cars figure you most people aren't that stupid to set it going downhill. And
but they've never met your husband. Is he kind of a devil-may-care kind of guy?
No, he's
Is he a wacko skier?
He's a great skier.
Ah, see? He's a great skier, and so he thinks that the faster you go down a hill, the more fun it is.
Well, it is, and he's trying to, he's not getting enough skiing in.
Well, he actually skis for a living, so.
Oh, he does. You should never, in my opinion, never use cruise control when you're going down a very long hill.
Unless, in fact, you can set it and put it in the proper gear, because you can put it in cruise control at 40 miles an hour and put it in second gear.
But this cruise control doesn't do anything. If you can put it in second gear and it will stay there, it would probably stay there without cruise control. You're not gaining anything by using the cruise control. You're only putting yourself in potential danger. It's a silly, crazy thing to do.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to agree with my brother.
Okay.
Disable the thing. The guy's crazy.
Yeah, pull the wires out.
Pull the wires out. He shouldn't be allowed to have cruise control.
Even if you're
even if nothing. He's crazy. Cruise control. The guy's climbing Mount Everest on cruise control. What?
Adrian, call the guys in the white coats before it's too late. Save yourself. Run.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your
Wow.
Thanks for your call.
I'm glad you called because, seriously, this is a very, very dangerous thing to do.
Okay.
Is he an engineer?
He's a ski instructor. He's a ski bum.
No, he's not.
he's probably an MD.
No. I'm the nurse, so I can
Oh, you're a nurse.
Oh, it's good that you're a nurse.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, he'll need it. Never mind.
Yeah, please tell him not to do this anymore.
Okay.
That would be good.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you.
Same
hey,
to you, Adrian.
Same to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK.
Is there no end?
888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Braden. I'm calling from Berkeley, California.
Braden?
Yep.
How do you spell Braden?
It's B-R-A-D-E-N.
Yeah.
Okay. Where does it come from?
I think it's Irish.
I think so, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is your heritage Irish?
Not really, no.
Not anymore, right? So where are you from again?
Berkeley. Berkeley, man.
I was fixated on the guy's name. All right, Berkeley. What's going on, Braden?
Well, I'm getting married in January.
Huh.
And my fiancé has two little girls from her first marriage, so we needed a minivan. So my fiancé really likes the old Odyssey, the first Odyssey that's more like a car.
Yes, I have one of those.
They're great. I did all this research, and I found the perfect car. It's beautiful. It's pretty. It's really good shape. Got it for her, and it smells. It smells like the dog of the first owner.
Ah.
And everything else is perfect, and I thought that would go away, but it just hasn't. And I've done, like, 10 things already to try to get rid of it. And
you are right in the right town. Have this problem.
Really?
In fact, we know where the dog sat. You know, it has that third row seat, and there was kind of like dog hair in there, so.
Now, you're in Berkeley.
I am in Berkeley.
Are you at school there, or are you just?
Just graduated, actually, yeah.
Are there any potheads left in Berkeley?
Are there any?
I'm sure there are, yeah.
You got to find them.
They're all in the faculty.
That's right. You're on the faculty now. You have to find one.
Yeah.
And
let them use your car.
Let them use your car. You guys want a place to smoke? I was actually going to suggest that you get yourself a little pot in which you can burn something.
A little pot. Incense.
Not incense. Coffee.
Coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Coffee is one of those things that, roasted, subsumes other aromas or smells.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, does this thing have cloth seats?
It does, yes.
Ah. That's the problem.
That's too bad.
Well, see, here's the thing. The upholstery shop wants to pull apart all the seats and steam clean the cushions, and that just makes me think of Wet Dog. But
that's even worse. Well, if it's mostly the backmost seat.
Yeah.
You only got two girls, so you don't need the real back seat right away.
Yeah.
So you could take those seats out and do the steam cleaning.
Yeah, and see if that works, yeah.
And if he does it and you notice, first of all, that when the seats are out, the smell is gone, that's good.
Yeah, right.
If you notice when those seats are out, there's still smell, it means they sometimes went into the middle seats.
Or it's in the rug.
Or it's in the rug.
Yeah.
Well, the
headliner, too. You know, when we try to get cigar aroma out of cars.
Oh, it's hard.
We have to shampoo the headliner of the car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, so you might
want to. Yeah, but the dogs aren't lying down on the.
No, but but the dog essence.
Oh.
No, we're talking about dog essence. It's really to dog.
We have some customers at the shop who have, like, three dogs that they take in their cars all the time. And there are some of those cars that, and I'm a dog lover, and I own dogs, and I
you
can't.
You want to buy a 1998 Honda?
I have a 97 Odyssey, and I cannot even get into those cars. You want to gag. The smell is so bad.
Yeah.
And yet the owners
don't notice.
Don't notice. In fact, they might even like it.
No, yeah. Because their noses have been destroyed. The old factories are gone.
Yeah. So I think you're on the right track.
Okay.
Braden, I think you need to have the thing steam clean, but it also would be good to get those seats out of there. Like Tommy had a good suggestion. If you take one seat out and the smell is essentially gone, then just throw that seat out and buy a replacement at the junkyard. But once you get it out, you can really have the thing fumigated.
Okay.
You know, and that might do the trick.
Alrighty.
And the kids are going to stink it up, too. Once you get your own smell in there, it'll overpower the dog smell.
How old are the kids?
6 and 8.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
But they have sensitive noses, too, so.
No, but can you get them to puke easily?
Drive them around the block.
That'll cover up the dog smell in a minute.
Or get them their own dog.
Well, yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, good luck, man.
Thanks so much.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, look, you know what part of the show it's time for now?
The swimsuit competition.
No, definitely not.
Well, we should try that. Have you seen Bugsy in his two-piece?
Two pieces of what? 4x8 plywood?
My brother will be back with a brand new puzzler, and we'll take more of your calls in about a minute, so please stay tuned. Well, I got a
And even though listeners decide they'd rather go through an aggressive TSA pat-down than have to hear us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back.
Ooh,
you're listening to
Car... wake me up.
You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and, of course, the new Puzzler.
Yes.
And I don't know who sent this in because the author listed himself or herself as anonymous donor.
Anonymous donor.
Yeah, didn't want his or her name associated with the Puzzler in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, I thought it was going to be from obfuscation. Go ahead, man.
Well, there's this unusual little bar in some unusual little corner, and in this bar you can get a free beer if you know the secret code. Mm. The secret code works like this. The bartender, you sit down at the bartender tells you a number, yeah. And you tell him another number. If it's right, you get a free beer. For example, a customer goes up to the bar, and the barkeeper says, 6. The customer says, 3, and he gets his free beer. The second fellow goes up to the bar, and the barkeeper says, 12. The customer says, 6. He gets his free beer.
Yeah.
You with me?
Yeah.
A third customer sits at the bar, and the bartender says, 14. The customer says, 8. He gets a free beer. Mm. You're sitting there. The bartender turns to you, and he says, 22. What do you say? And they didn't start with the word go. So the bartender says 22 to you. What do you say? That is, if you want a free beer. Now, if you think you know the answer, so I'll repeat them. The bartender says 6. The customer says 3.
Yeah.
The bartender says 12. The customer says 6. The bartender says 14. The customer says, unfortunately, 8. You were hoping for 7.
I was.
Yeah. And then the bartender says 22. I believe that's what he said.
Hmm.
And you say,
something.
Squat. Now, mm-hmm. If you know the answer, write it on the back of a $26 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
Right now, if you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jody, and I'm in Los Angeles, and that's the problem.
Is this a Jody with an I?
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, whenever I'm in Colorado, I get really good gas mileage, like 29 if I'm going up steep hills and going down steep hills to like 35. But then when I get to LA, it gradually goes down. And right now I'm at 24 miles per gallon, like over months. Last time I was here, I got down to 18 miles per gallon. I changed my gas to one other company and it went up. But this time I'm using that same company and it's going down still.
Yeah, now the gas has nothing to do with it, but we're going to just give you some little insight into why your mileage would be better in Colorado than it is in L.A. First of all,
there's no air in Colorado.
The air is thinner. You're up in the mountains. There's less wind resistance. Number two, there's less gravitational pull in your car because your father...
Oh, stop it! Stop it! Gravitational
pull. But most importantly, you're not doing bumper-to-bumper kind of, you know, stop-and-go driving that you do in L.A. You don't even realize it because you've gotten so accustomed to it, and that's a way of life in L.A.
You don't even notice that you're doing 25 miles an hour.
25? You kidding me? 5! I think the average freeway speed in Los Angeles is 15 miles an hour.
But the problem is that it goes down gradually, like over months, not like right away. Like my first tank, I'll get like 29. The second tank, I'll get maybe like 27. And then it just gradually over a few months works its way down. And then when I get back to Colorado, it's good again.
How many times have you done this experiment?
This is my third time.
Third time?
Yeah.
Has it always been that you've returned to Los Angeles at the same time of year?
I'm here at different times. Like last time it started getting better like right away when I put the other gas in. I mean, it wasn't like right up to Colorado standards, but it gradually did get it back up to 30 over like 5 tanks or so.
5 tanks?
Yeah.
Well, you must have been driving around for those 5 tanks full with the emergency brakes stuck on.
Well, because, so you go to Colorado and stay for quite a while, and you go to L.A. and you stay for quite a while.
Right.
Well, what do you do that you have this kind of freedom?
I like to travel a lot. Right now I'm working on a documentary.
Oh, really?
And it's in L.A., yeah. But, like, I live in Colorado. So.
Oh, you live in Colorado, so you come to L.A., and you think there's some kind of an acclimation process that's taking place
that
car still thinks it's in Colorado for those first few weeks that you're in L.A.
Months.
I mean,
it gradually goes down. I have no idea what the car thinks. It's a carbureted car.
Oh, it's an old car.
It's a Honda Accord 88 LX.
Is it stick shift?
No, it's automatic.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Well, this carburetor does have an altitude compensator.
Uh-huh.
And it could be that, geez, I mean.
Don't forget, what that altitude adjuster does is it's assuming that there's less air at the altitude.
At high altitude, yeah.
At high altitude, and therefore it's feeding less gas.
Right.
So you think, here's what Tommy thinks, if the thing is staying stuck in the Colorado mode.
Yeah. And then as it heats up.
Right.
And learns that, my God, I'm here at sea level. And it takes a few weeks for that to happen.
But does the opposite happen when you go to Colorado? Or does it
take a while to get acclimated to the high level?
No.
The next day, you're getting 35 miles per
gallon. Even if I go to Joshua Tree that's like 4,000 feet and dry, it's happy again.
Man, you have stumped the chumps.
Oh, no.
Before you go to Colorado, do you have somebody go through the car? I mean, it's just a wild guess, for example.
Yeah.
What if you took it to your mechanic before you went to Colorado and said, okay, make sure the thing's all right. I'm going to be gone for a couple of months.
Right.
And one of the things that your mechanic did was to inflate your tires to the proper amount. And then while you were there, air started to leak out,
this is good. I like
right?
the scenario.
And then your tire pressure were low enough so that when you got back to L.A., it would then begin to adversely affect your mileage. And then the next trip, the guy fills them up again. I mean, it's just a wild guess.
But it would be warmer in L.A.,
right.
And so the pressure would be higher.
Well, not if they're leaking out. Not if the air's leaking out. I don't know. Just a guess.
Yeah.
Just a guess. And maybe just the engine breathing all that dirty air in L.A., it just doesn't like it. It likes that clean mountain air.
I like the clean mountain air.
Well, I think you should stay in Colorado.
And stop bothering us with these damn phone calls.
I'm sorry.
Gee, Jody, you have really stumped us.
Yeah, and
we don't have a good answer to this.
My answer is I think that maybe you don't notice it right away. You know, maybe you have post-Colorado euphoria working in your favor here.
I'm real anal, though, and I divide all the gas mileage each time I fill up the tank because I'm one of those environmentalist people.
Yeah.
Oh, are you one of them? There's nothing wrong with that, but I think you
not that there's anything wrong with it.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, it's wonderful, but get a life, will you?
No, but this is significant enough a change.
Yeah.
That it's an unquestionable difference.
Well, I think it's more your driving than anything else.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's not much you can do about that except...
That would suggest that Jody has lied to us.
No.
No,
I don't think so. I think you're a very honest person, and I think my brother is a moron.
It has nothing to do with you. He thinks I'm a moron just in general. No, I don't think she's lied, but I think she has misrepresented to herself the facts.
But it's hard to believe that it makes a difference of 10 miles a gallon.
It could.
Wow.
It could. And I think that's probably, there may be other small secondary and tertiary factors.
Right.
I think the primary factor is that you are driving much more L.A.-style driving when you're there, and that does a number on your mileage.
Right.
It really does. And I imagine, you go for a smog test ever?
A smog test? Yeah, well, in Colorado, we have mandatory smog tests.
And it passes?
Oh, yeah, with flying colors. And it works great at both elevations.
You should go for one in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
Just for yucks.
Okay.
Just to see if it's running too rich.
Okay.
Because that would explain the drop in mileage. And there are lots of things. For example, the altitude compensation device in the carburetor could be causing that. There's also a thermally activated gate in the air cleaner that could be not working correctly at at lower altitude for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe it's getting insufficient vacuum,
okay,
and it doesn't open, and that could cut into your mileage. But all of that will be found out with a smog test, because
okay,
they'll determine what your levels are. And if your levels are bad, then you'll know, in fact, that there's something wrong. But if they're good, then it's you.
Okay.
Great. See you, Jody.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks
call
for
us back.
Call. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
But not soon. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Pashko from the Bronx.
Pashko.
P-A-S-C-H-K-O.
P-A-S-H-K-O.
Yeah.
P-A-S-H-K-O.
What is that? What nationality?
Nationality is Albanian.
Got it.
Get out!
Have you heard of that before?
Albanians?
Never.
We've heard of Albania.
We've heard of Albania, and we know a lot of Albanians, but none of them is named Pashko.
We like it. Pashko. What does that translate to?
It translates to Pashko.
I thought so.
That's it.
What's up?
I have a question on car etiquette and a speeding ticket.
Okay.
My wife and her sister drove from New York City to Ohio to their parents' house, and on the way there, her sister was driving, and she got a speeding ticket in Pennsylvania. When they got to their parents' house, her sister turns around and says, "When are you going to pay your share of the speeding ticket?"
Oh.
And, yeah, of course, my wife refused since she wasn't driving.
Yeah.
And her sister insisted that she pay her share because they were on this long car trip together. She was speeding for the benefit of both of them. So
yeah,
the question is, should she have to pay a share of this ticket?
Well,
or not?
How much is the ticket?
$150.
Whoa, she was really moving, huh?
and
where was the ticket gotten? In Ohio?
It was in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So it won't necessarily go on your driving record in New York.
No, it won't if you pay it promptly.
If you pay it promptly,
why,
yeah.
That's why the question came up upon their arrival,
yeah,
in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is more a question of etiquette. It's a question of relationships. How were they getting along prior to this?
Oh, they get along great. That's why they were driving together. They
yeah,
had the kids together in the car, and they were having a grand old time.
You see, I think the ultimate responsibility of driving the car within the limits of the law is the driver's.
But her theory is that she was doing this for the good of all of them who were driving there to get there sooner, and it was just her dumb luck that she was the one who got caught while she was driving.
No, as a matter of fact, it could be argued that she was endangering everyone by driving so much over the speed limit. To get a $150 ticket, she was probably 30 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Well, my father-in-law said that was the reason why my wife should pay for the whole thing, because she had two young children in the car, and she should have told her sister, don't speed and slow down, because she was endangering the kids.
Well, that's true.
That's true, too.
I think your wife should pay the whole thing.
Aren't you glad you called? No. I think sis should pay the whole thing. But whether or not your wife insists on that is up to you.
What about the theory that there's a tacit agreement among people driving across country that they're going to speed?
So it's understood that people driving in remote areas like wilderness of Pennsylvania.
Wait a minute. What if it were you and I? If we were, my brother and I were going to New York, and he was driving, and he got a $150 ticket, and he asked me to pay half of it.
Here's what I
what
hear.
Would I say?
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's right. What I'd say to my brother.
And
too.
if I asked you to pay mine.
No, I would say, be a man, pay your own ticket.
Yeah, or flake off, or some such thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, what your wife could have said is, gee, sis, you're going awfully fast. You might want to slow down.
But she didn't say that.
No, she was in the third row taking care of the infant.
Oh, so maybe she didn't even know how fast she was going.
That's what she said. She had no idea.
Oh, if she had no idea, then I think her sister pays the whole ticket.
Her sister is completely to blame.
But if it's going to destroy their relationship, then you ought to pony up half the money.
Well, we already took care of that because their mother, when they started going at it, volunteered to jump in and pay the other share if they would just stop talking about it.
Oh, they were arguing about it. Oh, yeah, no. Oh. In that case, it's, yeah. Well, you know what? They had no policy established.
Yeah.
And I think from now on,
there should be one.
They should establish a policy that if you're driving and you get a ticket, you pay the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean,
and I think, but up until that point, they had no policy.
And so my brother and I have no policy, except that he knows exactly what I would say.
And he knows now for sure.
And he knows now absolutely for sure. And I would expect the same.
Yeah. No, I would shoulder the brunt of it if I got the ticket.
Well, it's good that your mother stepped in. That was a good thing to do. And now they have an opportunity to set a policy.
All right. Well, thank you for the expert advice on car etiquette.
Pascal, good luck to you.
See you later.
It's bye nice bye. That your sister and your wife and her sister get along so nicely.
So far.
Right. I wish I could get along with my sister like that.
Bye-bye. Bye.
But she's such a nutcase.
Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk.
I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, I know. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Chris Cuff and Emily Mackey. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Abilene, Ovaltine, Jelly Bean, Grenadine, Margarine, Canned Sardine, Salad Green, Listerine, and Hot Caffeine Lunch Canteen is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Oteka Shower. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our press secretary is Don B. Zanozzi. Our Desi Arnaz biographer is Ike Arumba. Ike Arumba, you get it?
Ike Arumba.
Our appointment secretary is Amadeus O'Early. Our anger, oh no, she's not on the staff yet. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Our directors of quality control are Les Thomas and Noma Raymond. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the glassy-eyed shoppers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1051, slosh through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, it's your last chance to order Car Talk gifts for the holidays.
Which holidays? Like Groundhog Day?
Yeah, and Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah, of course. Remember, you know, if there's someone on your gift list who you just don't really like that much, you can get them one of Car Talk's CD collections. We have collections of our all-time favorite calls.
And our favorite cartoons.
Yeah, plus Car Talk t-shirts, mugs, water bottles, prison shanks, you know, the usual. All available for your perusal at the Shameless Commerce Division of CarTalk.com.
Oh, and happy holidays.
Oh,
everyone.
Yeah, indeed.
Indeed. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though people make holiday plans to avoid their radios whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.